Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. American Family Radio, we appreciate you listening, as always. And joining me to co-host today is Dr. Ray Pritchard. Just got off the airplane. How long ago, Ray?
We got back in after midnight last night from a trip to Ukraine. We were about 26 hours from Kiev, Ukraine, back here to Dallas. So, sometimes you want to say, I'm not responsible for what I may or may not say on the air this morning.
Well, trip go well? You went over there to teach the Bible?
Right. I was at Word of Life Bible Institute in Kiev, Ukraine, and I spoke last week on the book of James to a group of students from Tim, they were from Russia, Ukraine, Poland, Romania, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, Bulgaria, Lithuania. I mean, I met a guy from Kyrgyzstan. I barely know where Kyrgyzstan is on the map. I mean, it's over there by China. So had a fantastic, these young people from all over Eastern Europe, very eager to learn the Word of God. So A thrilling time to be with them. And we came back blurry-eyed, but grateful for the week we spent there.
What's the religious makeup over there in Ukraine?
Well, it is mostly Orthodox with a Catholic minority, but the Orthodox Church of Greek Orthodox and Russian Orthodox. But the Protestants over there, evangelicals, they are small but growing rapidly. Now, get this, Tim. There is, at Word of Life, they were telling me they can preach on the street, no problem. They can preach open air, no problem. You can go in and do gospel presentations in the public schools, and there is no ACLU to tell you you can't do it. There's more freedom to preach the gospel for the church in Ukraine than there is in America right now, which is a stunning reversal of events.
Mm. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
And glad your mission was successful and you're able to teach the Word of God and help those Christian brothers and sisters in that part. How did they get in touch with you, by the way? I'm just curious.
Well, Word of Life is a worldwide youth ministry, and they started in New York City right after World War II, around World War II. And so I do a lot of speaking for them here in the States. And a year and a half ago, I met a fellow by the name of Matthias, I can't say it's Radzeluk. I can't really pronounce his last name. And met him here in the States, and he invited me to come, and he kept inviting me. And finally, I said, he really wants me to come. So he just kept inviting me. He's like, come to the Ukraine. Come and teach our young people. Mm. And we did, and just had Marlene and I both had a terrific time over there. Very inspiring to be with those folks.
One other question. When you're teaching in a country that doesn't speak English, you have to be interpreted, I would assume, right?
That's right. And in fact, here's an interesting thing. Shows the sovereignty, the hand of God. They teach everything over there in Russian. And the reason they do is because the old USSR, which is now broken up, that was the language that the USSR, they would control a province and everybody had to learn Russian. So spread all the way from Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan to Romania, Bulgaria, Lithuania, the Baltic Republics, Poland, you had your local languages, but everybody had to learn Russian. And so it's kind of like the Greek language in the days of the New Testament, that everybody throughout the Mediterranean world spoke Greek 2,000 years ago. And out of the old USSR, they now speak, those countries speak Russian, so it's like the unifying language. So I taught with a Russian interpreter. And hi, Tony, if you're listening, he did my friend Tony did a terrific job. He picked up my mannerisms, and once we got into a rhythm, it was a fun thing to do.
Wow. Well, welcome back. And
thank you.
And good to have you back with us. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues. Dr. Ray Pritchard co-hosting with me, Tim Wildman. Today, Walker Wildman, going to keep our Facebook going. And good morning, Walker.
Good morning. We're on Facebook Live, and I've already actually posted two of the articles that Fred's going to talk about. So
okay.
I'm ahead of the game over here.
Fred Jackson, news director for One News Now and American Family News, is with us. Fred, good morning to you.
Good morning. Before we get into the news, can I ask Ray one more question?
Yes, go ahead.
Did you eat any of the local food? What are the big items on the food menu over there?
You know, we had borscht, which is kind of, if you call it beet soup to Americans, that doesn't sound very inviting. But we had borscht for lunch every day because it's really cold over there, really cold. So we had borscht, and which was very tasty, sort of a beets and potatoes and stuff. And then they served us chicken Kiev, which I didn't know that really came from the Ukraine. All I can say is if you've been to the U.S., you know, if you've had it here in the U.S., you should go to Ukraine. Get the real deal version over there. It was terrific.
Now that I got everybody hungry, we can deal with the news today.
I don't know about that. But
no borscht for you, Tim.
doesn't do much for my appetite right there.
Chicken Kiev sounds good, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some of the original. Anyway, news of the day. Let me read you the headline from the Associated Press this morning dealing with the electoral vote yesterday. This is their headline: Revolt Fizzles as Trump Easily Wins Electoral College Vote. Well, that pretty well describes it, you know. It was absolutely amazing. Think about all the news stories you saw, all the interviews leading up to that electoral vote yesterday. Like there was a crisis in the nation, a huge revolt going on, and guess what? You know who lost the most electoral votes? Hillary Clinton. Yeah, Trump lost 2 in Texas. Ray, I'm not sure what's going on in Texas there.
That should not be happening in Texas, right?
I don't know what happened there. Maybe they're from Austin or something. I'm not sure. But anyway, he lost 2 electoral votes in the whole country. It was in Texas. But Hillary Clinton lost 5. I think there were 4 in Washington State, 4 of the 12 there. 3 of them voted for Colin Powell. Not sure what the thinking was there, but they voted for Colin Powell and one other. And then I think in Honolulu, there was the electoral vote there that went against Hillary as far as amongst the Democrats. So that's what happened yesterday. You know, finally, Donald Trump comes up with 304 votes. Clinton had 227. There was a whole bunch of smoke about really nothing at all. And to the credit of a lot of the mainstream media, they said going into this yesterday, look, it's a foregone conclusion. This wasn't going to amount to anything. But I'll tell you, the protests were real. There were hundreds of people out in places like, you know, Pennsylvania yesterday and in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm not sure if you saw the clip that was being played several times of a woman at a meeting in Madison, Wisconsin yesterday, getting up, because Wisconsin went Republican, but getting up in a meeting and screaming at the top of her voice, "This is my country. This doesn't belong to you." And she's screaming, and they have to try to calm her down. But this is
she wasn't singing, "This is my country."
No.
She wasn't happy.
Oh, no.
No, okay. No. She's from the, you know, the loony left that's out there, okay, that's getting all the attention in all of this. But
do you have her soundbite?
We played it this morning on Sandy's show. I don't know whether we can dig that soundbite up.
I think
again,
that would bless people.
Well, you know what she may need?
She'll hear that.
The therapy where you go crying.
Yes.
She needs
some puppies.
Go
she needs
screaming.
To bring in the puppies and the warm cookies and milk.
Yes. Yeah, that may calm her down.
Yeah, so give her a blanket.
Yeah.
Right. We have it. No, what are we about to hear, Fred? We got the sound.
Do
bite.
We have the clip there, Brent? Okay. This is a woman in Madison, Wisconsin yesterday,
right,
reacting to the fact that the electoral vote went in favor of Trump. And
right,
she is most upset.
You don't deserve to be in America.
She needs help.
Right.
So she's yelling at these other people. Are these other people saying shame?
Yeah. She says to them, you don't deserve to be in America. And they're hollering out shame, shame to her. And then she says, this is my America.
I heard that.
Brother.
My America. Yeah, she needs a puppy or something.
She needs a Merry Christmas.
Okay.
So That's right. She needs a Merry Christmas.
So Donald Trump won handily, which was reflective of the Electoral College vote back in November. So
you wonder what's next.
So it's official.
The left doesn't give up, though. Now the pressure is on Vice President Biden.
Yeah.
He has to certify this on January the 6th.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, if you were a betting man, all comes down to Joe. Is he going to?
Oh, he's going to certify because he wants to run for president in 4 years.
Okay. So
when he's 80.
He's not going to react to the.
He doesn't want Hillary to win.
Then on January 21st come the cries for impeachment before he's even got his furniture moved in the White House.
Exactly. That's being talked about now, calls for impeachment.
Well, I think this backfires.
This is going to get boring.
The liberals are not in a good position right now.
No.
I think they need to focus on themselves, look inwardly, have their group therapy, and not try to tear down Trump right now, because it's not going to work, because the people are supportive of you know what? Americans generally are supportive of whoever the new president is and giving him a chance to succeed.
That's exactly right.
And so that's going to be the – so if you want to get started with this kind of negativity, I think it's only going to hurt the Democrats even worse.
And you remember in 2012 after Romney lost, Rince Priebus or whoever was the RNC chair issued began an autopsy report, that's what they called it, of their own party to see what we can do better to hopefully win the next year. And, of course, they won this year. But instead of the Dems doing maybe an autopsy report or self-reflection, like you said, they're just blaming everybody else for their own problems.
And this is a huge problem for them. You know, they think the enemy is Donald Trump. But their biggest problem right now for the Democratic Party is, where do we go from here? I mean, they turn around and reelect Nancy Pelosi to be the minority leader in the House. And there were, at least 60 Democrats that said, wait a minute. She's going to keep us on the same track that got us in trouble.
Mm-hmm. I just say to the Democrats, the Nile ain't just a river in Egypt. I think they need to. The other thing is that, Walker, I think you talked about this. In 2 years, the Democrats stand to lose a lot more Senate seats than the Republicans, and they're already in the minority 52-48.
It's something like 25 or 28 Democrats senators up for re-election.
In 2018, and if Republicans – even if they just take a handful of seats,
it's going to broaden the margin in the in the Senate.
You're talking about having possibly a supermajority.
Yeah, so you're right. President Obama is really the only face of the Democrat Party right now that has any resonating any at all with the American people, and that's. You know, he's probably 50-50 on his job approval. I don't know if it's 50% or not, but they don't have a bench. Nancy Pelosi, she's like the, the 42-year-old NFL quarterback. She's like Peyton Manning. Her arm's worn out, okay? And he had a great career. She had a great career. I don't agree with her politics. I'm talking about the way she rose in stature in her own party. That's what
very powerful.
It's a very powerful career, but it's over. And you're going to have to, like Peyton Manning, you're going to have to face the facts that, that it's time to move on.
Well, but
she hasn't yet.
To go back to what we were talking about yesterday, there is a vacuum in the Democratic Party right now. And it looks like Barack Obama wants to put himself into that vacuum. He wants to be the face of the Democratic Party. A few people were talking about it yesterday, kind of this shadow government that I think he wants to – he's going to move back. He's going to stay in Washington. He's renting an 8,000-square-foot house somewhere there in Washington, upscale neighborhood there. And as we talked about yesterday, he's telling in an NPR interview – he says, I'm going to be out there, and there's this new generation coming along. I'm going to be their champion on climate change and their champion on Obamacare and all of this. This man, unlike other past presidents who go away and leave the new president, he wants to be on the cameras. And you're going to see Barack Obama's face on a regular basis on nightly newscasts. He will not go away.
It seems a strange thing, Fred, to me that he's not leaving Washington. Isn't it a tradition that when a president steps down, either defeated or he just comes to the end of his term, that not only they step down but they move out of the capital city so that there's going to be some sense of distance.
Let me just, to his defense, President Obama, and I'm known for that, aren't I? Defending right. President Obama. But I did hear the Obamas were buying, well, I don't know if they're renting or buying. I think they're buying a home. I want to say Palm Springs, California.
There was a rumor to that effect.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then also a home in, I don't know if they're renting or buying, in Washington, D.C. And the reason they were staying in Washington, D.C. is so their daughter could finish high school. Now, I don't know how many more years she has. Are both of them, one of them graduated?
One of them, I think, graduates this year. But why would you hang around? Let's say the other one's grade 8. You're going to stay in Washington for 4 more years?
I agree with you. I don't think it's appropriate. I think the time-honored tradition is that when you're through with your 2 terms, okay, you've had 8 years, it's time to move out of Washington, D.C., go live somewhere else, and basically do charity work, or if you want to do some policy things, but don't be, like you described, Fred, some sort of shadow government. So I think, you know, and goodness gracious, Secret Service is like, probably, really? We got Trump and Obama in the same town? We got to, you know, we got to close down roads every day, all day?
Right.
All over the place? Some people think that President Obama has these. Time will tell. Has these great aspirations for continued power, and maybe he does. I just get the sense, though, that the guy wants to criticize. Maybe he's like, you know what? It's my turn. I'm going to criticize the other guy for 8 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. But also there's a side of me that says this guy just wants to go golf. And he's tired of all the riffraff. And Walker, what do you?
Well, I think he can do both.
Dr. Walker,
I think he can
we
golf.
Need a psychologist here to break this thing down. Go ahead.
I think he can golf and once a week.
In Palm Springs? So you go live in Palm Springs during the
Well, you golf
in the winter.
You can golf.
He'll be golfing every day in Palm Springs.
You can golf 300 days a year, and once a week do a media interview with 60 Minutes or CNN, and just lay down on Trump and just criticize and do whatever you want to do, and then just go golf again.
I don't know. I think that hurts him in the eyes of fair-minded Americans.
Well, and another thing is, you know, he may have. Let's say he has a 50% favorability rating. His party just suffered the most embarrassing loss possibly in political history, and he's the leader of the party. So, he was elected twice. I'll grant him that, but things aren't going too well for his party, and he's the leader. So,
I wonder how much he can make for a speech, Fred. Do you have any idea what the market's going to be for that?
Bill Clinton has been getting, like, we're talking $200,000, $300,000.
Yeah, but that was pay per play.
All right.
That was in anticipation of his wife being the president. So the people who were paying him that kind of money were paying it forward for privileges once she was in the White House, and now she isn't. I just wonder if he's going to have to give some of that back.
Oh, he'll give speeches. He'll make millions on that. He'll make millions. He'll write more books.
He's a
young guy. He's got many years.
Oh, yeah. He's what, mid-50s, somewhere in there, or late 50s? Right.
But the way of the world is, what I've just said was accusatory of inappropriate behavior, but that's the way of the world. You know, these people who were paying that much money, $250,000 for a speech, for example, to Bill Clinton, were paying for the future. Mm-hmm. They weren't paying for...
What about, also Cutter's $1 million birthday check to Bill? You think that was just to be nice?
Right. You know? Right.
But no, they just wanted to congratulate him, that's all.
I will say this, the Clintons, man, they made a killing.
Since
they did. Have you seen Ray? I mean, they have now like over $100 million in their pocket, and when they left the White House, they were broke.
That's right, they were broke.
You remember that?
It's an amazing American story, you know.
somebody's
rags to riches.
Well, I was reading an article where some of the top donors of Hillary Clinton's campaign are very upset, and they're wanting answers as to why she lost.
We got puppies.
She spent $1.2 billion.
We got ice cream. You want answers? Right. We got peach cobbler.
They want answers.
That's
why
peach cobbler and puppies.
She spent a record $1.2 billion with a B dollars on her campaign, and there's nothing to show for it. Not a
single thing.
When
the history books are written about this presidential race, it is, you mentioned Walker. I would be the Democrats and the big donors to Hillary Clinton have got to be still livid. I mean,
don't you
think, Ray? Because the money they spent and all he did was tweet.
That's right.
Huh? He got free media,
right?
And he got a lot of free media. Did Donald Trump? He's very shrewd in that way. He learned that the Twitter could bypass the media, and he'd get the Twitter whatever Donald Trump tweeted.
That's right. Tweeted
whatever he tweeted. Became the news cycle for the next 12 to 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that was like free media. And then he would do these rallies with 10, 20,000 people. As I heard somebody say last night, what the national media didn't recognize was all the local media he got it for these rallies in the places that he went. So, I mean, it was a masterful plan that Donald Trump had, his campaign, or had to get by on far less money than Hillary Clinton had.
And every time the media thought that his tweets that they would, you know, make a big story about were going to affect him negatively. You know, it would be like Trump would tweet.
Please don't throw me in that briar patch.
Trump would tweet, I'm going down to Mar-a-Lago for a weekend. And then the media would say, Trump takes off the campaign to go golfing.
Right, right.
And it gets, and none of his supporters, he doesn't lose any votes.
All he has to do is go out to dinner unannounced and he makes headlines. The media gets all upset.
Right.
But now he's into it with, think about it, he's into, Ray, I don't know if you saw this, with Bill Clinton.
Got in a little tweet battle with him.
Well, Bill Clinton was at a book signing yesterday in New York, I think, and said Donald Trump didn't know anything. He didn't know much. he was like disparaging, like he's pretty much a dummy, and he said, Bill Clinton said he only won because of James Comey. I mean, he was very...
you mean read Trump's remark?
Yeah, so Trump responded.
Yeah, read that.
You know, Trump rarely responds to criticism. Yeah,
right.
He's got a lot of self-control.
That's right.
So what did Trump tweet?
After Bill Clinton's comments, Trump tweeted. He had to do two separate tweets because it was so much.
Yeah. Right.
How many words can you put on a tweet?
140.
Okay.
Yeah. Bill's worth two.
He said, Bill Clinton stated that I called him after the election. Wrong. He called me. And then he put in parentheses, with a very nice congratulations. Then he put, he, quote, doesn't know much, especially how to get people, even with an unlimited budget, out to vote in vital swing states.
Yeah, because Bill Clinton said that Trump yesterday didn't know much. And Trump saying, oh, yeah? Well, I knew enough to beat you and your wife. And the thing you learn about Trump is you don't – he's got that tweet. And nobody controls it, I guess, but him.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do something to him that he feels is going to hurt him or is I don't know what you, then he's going to blast you out of the water.
He's going to drop the hammer on Twitter.
It's going to be an interesting 4 years, I tell you what.
All right, we got to take a break right here. We got a lot more news to talk about. We didn't even get to the fact that the Russian ambassador to Turkey was assassinated yesterday and I don't know if it was Istanbul or where it was. But also, there's some very interesting moves being made in the state of North Carolina around HB2, the bill that protects women and children in state facilities from men going into the public restrooms and the showers and such. We're going to talk to Tammy Fitzgerald from North Carolina about this momentarily. Stay with us.
On the next Today's Issues, we'll welcome Dr. Alex McFarland of Exploring the Word.
Christ will return victorious evil will be put away and God's eternal kingdom will be ushered in. That's what we all agree on.
We'll have reports from Steve Jordahl and Fred Jackson. And Abraham Hamilton III will be in to help make sense of the latest. That's on the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. Hey, the train to Israel's leaving, so it's a last call. Actually, a train can't go to Israel, but you get the idea. We're planning on going to the Holy Land in March, and it's time to sign up if you're going to go, because we've only got just a few seats left on our tour to Israel. We're going to fly from JFK to Tel Aviv and then bus to Jerusalem, where we'll be for 4 days, and we'll be seeing all the places you've read about in the Bible. And we're going to be on to Bethlehem, then Jericho, and the Dead Sea, and Masada, and the Jordan River, and the Sea of Galilee, and the Valley of Armageddon, and Mount Carmel, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's going to be a wonderful time seeing Israel. For more information, visit the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. A wave of terror sweeps across Europe just after the Islamic State called for a bloodletting across the region. The Islamic radicals urged to target Christians, specifically in shopping centers and crowded outdoor markets like the one hit yesterday in Berlin. Police have yet to call that attack an act of Islamic terrorism, but I suspect it's only a matter of time. Many German citizens are taking to the streets, outraged over their nation's open-door immigration policies. Like many European nations, Germany's been overrun by Muslim refugees who refuse to assimilate. And that's why our nation should be on guard this holiday season, especially on Christmas Day and Christmas Eve. It would also be prudent for your church to have some sort of security protocol in place, because we have no idea how many Islamic radicals have been granted refuge on our shores. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues, to the program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Dr. Ray Pritchard. And Fred Jackson. Hey, Fred, real quick before we go to our next guest, Walker's getting our next guest on. Do they know any more about the situation in Turkey with the Russian ambassador?
No, other than the reaction.
He was assassinated.
A guy, an off-duty police officer, was there. The ambassador was giving a speech. I think it was an art gallery or something like that. And this off-duty police officer who managed to get in there, he was all dressed up in a suit. White shirt, tie, the whole thing. And he just pumped 8 bullets into the back of the ambassador, killed him on the spot, hollered Allah Akbar, and he said, I'm not going to leave here alive, and he didn't leave alive. He was shot and killed.
Well, there was a political motivation. I don't think this was jihad necessarily myself in the traditional sense we know jihad. This was a political assassination because, from what I gathered from the assassin, mm-hmm. hearing him talk, it was kind of surreal. I mean, it was like something out of a movie.
Yeah.
I watched the video. I didn't see the guy shot. I saw the moment after he had been shot. I don't think they showed the probably out of respect for his family or something. That it was morbid. It was very violent. But the what he said, Ray, was basically he was saying that the Russians are joining with Assad in Syria to kill innocent people in Aleppo.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Aleppo. And this guy, the assassin, identified with them or wanted to champion their cause. And so he was angry with the Russians for supporting Assad. So I hope that made sense. Is that what you got from it, Ray?
That's exactly right. That this is. Yeah, and now, ISIS has come out and claimed responsibility, and so has one other organization, maybe Al-Qaeda. I mean, there have been a couple of groups that have said this is our guy, but you're exactly right. This was a political assassination.
Right.
And you know, I don't remember seeing anything as filmed like this, because we're living in the day there's so much media. So I mean, there's video out there, there's shots, and I mean there's tapes and so on of what happened. It's shocking to look at. So was he an Islamic radical? Yes, but he was making a political point that he was opposing what Assad and Putin are doing in Syria.
Right, as opposed to a kill the infidel, which is the traditional Islamic jihadist motivation. They just want to slay the infidel, as many of them as they can, like the situation probably in Berlin
right.
with the truck. That's more traditional jihad. Kill as many Christians as we can find, Jews as we can find, because Allah is happy when we do that. That's jihad. This was more of a political assassination, and we will see what comes of that, because Putin says, I don't know who's going to pay for that, because who's behind it? This guy may have been on his own. You know what I'm saying?
Who are the Russians going to attack?
Yeah, who are you going to attack? This guy. Right. So
they're not going to invade Turkey,
right?
So. No,
exactly. You're not going to invade Turkey. Hey, listen, I want to turn our attention to North Carolina for a few minutes, because something very interesting is going on there, and especially I wanted our North Carolina listeners to understand what's going on in their home state, because it's very important. Having to do with the HB2 law, which was passed by the North Carolina State Legislature and signed by the governor this year, to protect women and children in particular from public restrooms and showers from men being able to go in there. Joining us to talk about it is Tammy Fitzgerald. Tammy's with North Carolina Values. Tammy's been working as hard as anybody, maybe harder than anybody in her state, to protect the privacy of women and children there, and the liberal media and the Hollywood types and the Obama administration and all of them have been coming down on people like Tammy. But Tammy stood strong, and there's a current situation that exists here having to do with HB2 that I wanted to let people be aware of. Tammy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tim. It's happy times in North Carolina again.
Oh yeah, you. I get your tongue's firmly planted in your cheek there on that one, right?
I call this our Christmas treason.
Let me set it up, and you tell me where, just for the benefit of the listeners around the country who haven't followed this story very closely. By the way, do you have 10 minutes with us?
I do, yes.
Okay, you tell me when you have to go. I know your husband's having some medical treatment done right now, so we appreciate you pausing to be on with us.
Sure.
The Charlotte City Council in the spring last year passed an ordinance where they said that transgendered people could go into any bathrooms that they wanted to in Charlotte, right?
That's correct. And, of course, this is a classic, what we call SOGI law, where the local government added the terms sexual orientation and gender identity to existing non-discrimination laws. And the effect of that is that transgender people can go into any bathroom, shower, locker room, or other intimate facility that they identify with,
okay,
regardless of the privacy rights of others.
Right. So just to break through all the political correct talk, you're talking about Charlotte said, men, you're welcome in women's restrooms and showers, changing areas. Come on in. That's basically what they said,
that's
right?
Correct.
Okay. Because nobody,
that is right.
Because nobody stops. Nobody would stop a man, even if he wasn't dressed up like a woman, and say, hey, or you feel like you're transgender today. If you don't, you can't come in here. So it's just chaos, and it puts women and children at risk. It violates their privacy. It's just It goes against nature. There's a reason why everywhere in the world you go, probably since the dawn of civilization, there's a restroom for men and a restroom for women, because we all know that that's the right thing to do, and that's public safety is involved here too. Okay, so City of Charlotte said, no, we're going to do away with all that. We're going to welcome men into women's restrooms and with little girls. And the state of North Carolina, the legislature said, wait a minute, this is not your prerogative. This is unconstitutional according to the state constitution of North Carolina. Public accommodation is only the purview of the state legislature. So you've overstepped your grounds, City of Charlotte. So therefore, we must pass a law protecting the women and children from and their privacy. So we passed HB 2. Then Bruce Springsteen and the Hollywood crowd and the liberal world just came down on North Carolina as being insensitive and hateful and bigoted and all this garbage. But North Carolina stood strong. The legislature did. The governor, McCrory, who was defeated a few weeks back, barely, he lost. But now, where are we? Where are we now with this situation?
Well, now that the left can't use this issue as a way to defeat a sitting Republican governor, they have decided to repeal the ordinance in Charlotte. So they did that day before yesterday.
Wait a minute. You're talking about the City of Charlotte, who the same city council who passed the law that started this fire in the first place, repeal their own law?
Yes. And
why would they do that? Why would they do that?
Well, because in the summer, the governor and both legislative leaders, House Bill 2 strongly, both made a statement and promise that if Charlotte would repeal the ordinance they passed, then they would repeal House Bill 2. And I believe it was kind of a game of chicken that no one really ever thought Charlotte would do it, because the mayor in Charlotte was elected by the Human Rights Campaign to pass that ordinance. And so now that they can't use it anymore in the election process to help defeat a governor or legislative leader, they came back and said they would lift the ordinance, and so they repealed it 2 days ago. Kind of a surprise move right before Christmas.
Okay.
But they told the legislature it's only valid if they repeal House Bill 2 before the end of this year with no conditions and no strings attached.
Okay, here's where the people of North Carolina who are listening to us, they need to, you really need to pay close attention here, to because this is the crux of the matter why Tammy's on with us right now. This is dirty pool. Tammy, I think you would agree. What's going on here is meant to trick the people of North Carolina and the state legislature. This is the way I see it after studying this for the last 24 hours, and you're an expert in this area. Here's what's likely to happen. There is a reason why the City Council of Charlotte rescinded their own vote. They're not being condemned by the Human Rights Campaign or the liberal left or the media yet. I haven't seen that. And you wonder, scratch your head, why wouldn't the City Council of Charlotte be condemned if they've taken back protections for LGBT in their town? Well, the reason is what's going to happen is they've rescinded that so that the state legislature would take away HB2, repeal HB2 in a special session tomorrow, I think it is, they're supposed to repeal it. Then when the state legislature repeals HB2, then the City of Charlotte goes back and institutes the same law again, or Raleigh does, or Wilmington, or somebody else does, and there's no protection then for the women and children of the state of North Carolina against men going into their restrooms. And by the way, this the law that the HB2 only has to do with public accommodation, government-owned facilities. It doesn't have anything to do with private restrooms, private restaurants, for example. So is that what's about, you see, is the danger of happening here, what I've just described? Tammy? Is Tammy gone? I can't hear. See if you can get. Tammy, we couldn't hear a word you said the last 30 seconds, so go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, what they're talking about here is repealing House Bill 2 with nothing in its place, like an absolute repeal. And so what will happen is that this other city, including...
She's breaking up. Walker, can you just go talk to her on the phone? We get the idea. What we need from Tammy, I can't hear Tammy, so what we need from Tammy is the phone number for the state house in, I think it's, is it Raleigh?
Raleigh's the capital. Here's a question that a lot of people are going to be asking in North Carolina. The Republicans control the House and the Senate.
Supermajority.
Supermajority.
So, they don't have to do anything.
So why are they caving?
Well, they haven't caved yet. The question at hand is, will the Republicans repeal in North Carolina HB2? And Dan Forrest, who's Superman, he's the lieutenant governor up there, and he's been just a champion of common sense and a champion of protecting the privacy of women and children in North Carolina. He's the lieutenant governor. He got more votes in the last election than Donald Trump did, so he's very popular. Mm-hmm. He holds the cards, and I think you can have full confidence that Dan Forrest is going to do the right thing. But still, there may be some people in his own party who may be willing to repeal HB2. Did that make sense? What we were talking about there?
Okay, so. Let me just ask you to make sure I understand. So this whole thing started when Charlotte passed this ordinance, which we opposed.
Yes, okay? The liberal Charlotte City Council started this whole thing.
And so that led the state legislature to pass HB2.
Yes.
Right.
Which protected the women and children. We support that.
Yes.
So now, in a political move, the Charlotte City Council has repealed their own ordinance, the thing that started everything.
And which they could have done
at any time
last year prior to the election.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, we're glad they repealed it, in that it was a bad ordinance to start with, a dangerous thing. But now it's revealed as a purely political play to force the legislature to back off of HB2. Is that about the way
the way it's being described in the media is that there's a deal that's been worked out between the outgoing governor, McCrory, and the city of Charlotte. All right, if you guys get rid of your ordinance, then we'll get rid of HB2. That's the way it's being described in the media. Now, the question that's being asked is, well, why does the supermajority Republican legislature have to do this? They have an incoming Democrat governor, but they're going to have a supermajority in January the 1st.
Well, they've lost business. They've lost some business.
Right, you're right.
They've lost some business because of it. It's been very high profile. North Carolina has been beat over the head by the liberal media in Hollywood.
PayPal, for
being bigots and everything. So I'm sure a lot of those Republican legislators want to get it. They view that as an albatross or a monkey on their back. But they don't want to be seen as yielding either to this because they also got voted in by people who say, I don't care if you lose a little business, you do what's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so does this mean that in order for there to be a special session by the end of the year, McCrory, the outgoing
governor,
is he the one that
calling it for tomorrow.
Oh, he is calling it. Okay.
He's calling it for tomorrow. And so, again, just to clarify as I can simplify this situation is, there's a reason why the Charlotte City Council is not being attacked by the liberal media for taking away the very law that they passed to extend the rights of LGBT.
Right.
Okay, they by 10-0 vote, they took back their own their own resolution, their own law on this. Okay, so you have to ask yourself, why is that? That's curious. Why aren't they being condemned? You would think the left would be going after the Charlotte City Council today, but they're not. The reason is they want the state legislature of North Carolina to repeal HB2 tomorrow in a special session. Then Charlotte comes back and passes the same law again next week. And then there's no recourse for the people of North Carolina who believe in protecting the privacy rights of women and children, because the newly elected Democrat governor will veto any new law like HB2. You see how this game's played?
Oh yeah.
You see what's see what's happening here?
So because the legislature doesn't want to pass it and then repeal it, then have to pass it again
and fight the whole thing over again. The whole thing over again, and so it's a trick. I think it's otherwise North Carolina. Otherwise, the City Council of Charlotte would never rescind something they held was the moral high ground, that is letting men into women's restrooms and changing areas. If you felt like you were a woman, that was the right thing to do according to the Charlotte City Council. So, all this to say this: if you live in the state of North Carolina, we were talking to Tammy.
We still have her on with us.
And I've been talking for 5 minutes. She's been listening to me.
Yeah, Tammy's on with us.
Okay, Tammy, you back with us? Tammy gave up on. She listened. I didn't know that she was still on the line. I thought we couldn't reach her. Anyway, Walker, what's the state legislature in Raleigh? What's the phone number?
I don't know. I have the internet in front of me, so I'm gonna look up the legislator's phone number.
Well, listen. Here's the bottom line.
We don't.
If you live in North Carolina, call your state legislator.
Right.
And let them know to keep HB2.
Right.
That's all you need to say. Keep HB2. That's all you need to say.
And is it a done deal that it's going to be?
I don't know
tomorrow?
Right. It's tomorrow.
That's up in the air. Yeah.
Well, now the Republicans in North Carolina have said all along, many of them, that if Charlotte would take back their law, that they would repeal HB2, and we would get back to where everything was before the Charlotte City Council started this fire, as I mentioned. But you see now the governor's. Who's head of the governor's race has affected things now for the reasons I just went over. So I think it's dirty pool, what's going on there. And I think
let me ask one other question. So why Fred, is Governor McCrory, why is he going along with this and calling the special session?
That's the question. We were discussing this morning. What's in it for him? I mean, he's out of a job.
Right.
Because he lost the election. So
he only lost by 10,000 votes. He did lose, but I'm told by people in North Carolina that there was more to it than just HB2. He lost by, for another reason, some kind of toll bridge issue or toll road issue that was very controversial.
But bottom line, he's still out of a job.
Yeah, still out of a job.
Yeah.
True.
Right. So what's in it for him? Does he want to look benevolent leaving office and that, you know, these companies will stop their boycotts?
Well, he may want to run for Senate one day, for example. I don't
know. Maybe that's the motivation.
You know? The lieutenant governor is Dan Forrest, and he got more votes than Donald Trump or anybody. Mm-hmm. So he won, and he's been the champion of HB2.
This is from the North Carolina government website. I have a copy of the extra session order that the
special
governor
session
signed. Yeah.
Okay.
Tomorrow, which is December 21st, at 10 a.m., the state legislator is going to convene for the specific purpose
of repealing,
of reconsidering, their word is reconsidering, the House Bill 2. And they specifically lay that out. So there's no hidden agenda here. Everybody knows what they're doing.
Yeah,
and
okay.
I have the switchboard number if you want me to give that out.
Okay. And especially for people who live in, the best, most effective thing is if you call your own state legislator or state senator in Raleigh for this special session, if you live in North Carolina, and let them know, do not repeal HB2.
Mm-hmm.
What's the number?
The number is, if you live in North Carolina, write this down if you can, 919-733-4111. That's 919-733-4111, and that's the main switchboard.
Right,
the state capitol.
Right, what's going on here is the push by the secular progressives in this country to break down the difference between men and women.
Right.
Why would they want to do that? That seems against nature.
They're against the very concept of male and female. They are in favor of fluid gender identity. You know, we sort of talk about it. Well, I wake up one day and I think I'm a girl, I think I'm a boy, but that is essentially their point of view. They're in favor of that. It's as much a worldview issue for them as this is a worldview issue for us. They do not believe in the facts of human biology, that you are either male or female. They simply don't believe that. So
is that anti-God?
It's an attack on everything in the Bible, starting with the first page, the first chapter, Genesis 1. Male and female, he created them. So is it an anti-God? Yes, and it's an attack on the authority of our Creator who made us this way.
You know, what's amazing in all this, and it's mentioned each time these issues come up, the individuals being talked about here getting this special protection represent 2 to 3% of the population. That's all.
Transgender, less than that, I think.
Less than that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you look at this and you say, wait a minute.
Right.
You know, corporate America bending over backwards to go along with this.
Like this Target did.
Like Target did, PayPal, and
NCAA.
NCAA.
Say we're not going to hold championship games
in North Carolina. Yeah.
All of this. That's a big deal for them. Yeah.
And you say, why? Mm-hmm. What's in it for you? Yeah, the people of North Carolina, a strong Christian state. Why, you know, is this happening? This, and it goes to what Ray's talking about. This is spiritual warfare. It's the only way you can explain. You can't explain it really economically why corporate America would do this kind of thing. It is spiritual warfare.
Yeah, it's spiritual warfare. I tell you what, the LGBT lobby or crowd, if you will, have. Their power way outweighs their numbers. So they control all these big companies. Mm-hmm. In many respects, the NCAA, for example. You wonder what the NCAA getting involved, pulling their tournaments because North Carolina wants men to go to men's restrooms and women to women's.
Mm-hmm.
That really, yeah, because that's how powerful the LGBT community is. And what this is, as Ray was pointing out, what this is anti-Christian, all right? Because they don't want you to make a moral judgment about somebody's lifestyle. We used to say somebody who was a man who dressed up like a woman was screwed up in the head. You remember those days?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Oh, yeah.
You can't say
and
that.
That wasn't that long ago, Tim.
No, and everybody knew what you were saying was true.
Right.
You know... It's not right for Bruce Jenner to walk around in a dress. We all know this. But because the anti-Christian attitude that exists in our country against any kind of moral judgment, we all have to pretend that what Bruce Jenner is doing is somehow normal. Mm-hmm. When we all know it isn't.
Right.
But that's the worldview that is prevailing Hollywood today. So they would, when you say something about a man dressing like a woman, that person has emotional problems. Or is messed up in some way, they say, how dare you, Christian bigot, judge somebody's behavior in that way?
And they've just passed judgment on you for saying that.
Right.
Right.
They hate us. They hate us for making, but they only hate us because we cite God's moral law.
That's right.
You see what I'm saying? This is what it all goes back to your point, Fred, about this being spiritual warfare situation. So, right, is that... That's what's going on here. You got National Geographic, by the way. We'll talk about this next half hour. But National Geographic magazine, yes, the travel magazine, is doing a whole cover feature on a boy who, 11-year-old boy who thinks he's a woman, a girl. Man. Transgenderism.
It's
and National Geographic, huh?
It's disturbing because we're talking about children here.
Yeah, and it's a travel magazine, National Geographic, animals, travel. And they're dealing with gender. They call it the gender revolution. We'll tell you more about that when we get back from the break. But God's moral law and God's order, natural order of things, is under siege by the secular progressives in America. And if you want to know why they hate people like us, it's because we say, "Thus saith the Lord." And they can't stand that, buddy.
Yeah.
They can't stand that. We'll be back in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.